Oh, did you not want my fingers in your mouth? Sorry, sir.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of Itropology. I'm Alan, and I'm here with the ever overworked Adam.
Overworked, mate, you're right. It's a new year and a new me. How are you?
I'm really good. For a man that's so overworked, for a man that's so tired, calloused hands, all working all day and all night, you look ever so nice today. I'd like to wish you a happy new year, because temporally we shift around on Itropology. This is the first episode we're recording in the year of 2024, and what a year it's been so far. I can't wait to talk to you all about it.
Yeah, happy new year, mate. It's wonderful to see you. It's been a really long time. We haven't been talking that much. I know you've had a lot going on. I can't wait to hear what you've been up to.
Oh, so much going on. Last time the listeners heard from me, I was in the mystical mountainous land of Nepal, and I was enjoying my time so much. What an amazing country. I adore it, and it will always have a piece of my heart. Like a jilted lover who's separated from someone who I love very dearly and emotionally can't get over the intense feelings I have for it, me and Nepal are ever connected.
Yeah, I really get the impression. Do you know what? I've spoken to a lot of people about Nepal because you're there and people are seeing our content, of course, and listening to the episodes. Hmm. And everyone's in love with it. I mean, I'm really quite envious that you went there, and I'm really inspired to go and see it myself.
I'm quite envious as well. Who are these people who love so much that which I hold so dear? I want names, Adam. But no, I think it's just a charming, very beautiful country. I think it's like, in terms of backpacking,
yeah,
you can't beat it. The food's amazing. The community's amazing. The hiking's amazing. The culture's amazing. There's just so much to love.
Is it really diverse as well across the different towns? Because I know you travelled a fair bit overland when you were there.
Yeah. I mean, where I was hiking, I was very much in Sherpa country. So culturally, quite linear in the Everest region, but on the Annapurna circuit, you've got so many different cultures. In Kathmandu, you've got your own culture. And I spent the last little bit of my time in Nepal in Pokhara, which is like a sort of hippie, backpackery lakeside commune. I was going to see movies in garden open air cinemas and just hanging out with other backpackers. It was dead good, man.
You hippie?
Yeah, I know. I've got one dreadlock the audience won't be able to see, even if they go to youtube.com/Itropology podcast. Just running down the nape of my neck to indicate my ascent into hippiedom.
You better not be wearing fucking shoes.
Mate, if you saw my tootsies right now, you saw my little feet, you'd know that they're entirely bare. They've not seen a shoe in weeks.
That's incredible. You're drawing up that energy from the earth, and so you should be. So for someone who loves Nepal so much, it's always the question that we have to ask ourselves as travellers: when do we leave a country, especially if we're having such a good time? So what was it that brought you to that decision?
Well, I mean, it's essentially visas, Adam. I originally got a month visa, and I extended it to go on that hike. And then also, India was beckoning me, was calling me. I'd done quite a lot in Nepal, and Emmy, off of trekking in the Himalayas, was in India. And I thought, wouldn't it be nice to spend Christmas with her?
Totally.
So I flew in to Delhi on Christmas Eve, had Christmas with Emmy, and then the pair of us have been sojourning south. We've essentially speed run India down south to get to the south for the cooler winter weather. And we've had New Year's in a place called Vagator down in Goa, which has been an effervescent sort of a party.
Wow.
Now we've met with Luis, one half of the Spanish couple.
Right.
And we're just sort of hanging out, surfing on the beach. It's amazing. It's like Himalayan trekking part two, sans Lucas with Luis. It's really quite incredible. So Vagator, New Year's Eve, we went to this place called Hilltop, and it was such a phenomenal, I mean, just a phenomenal experience. Hilltop's quite an expensive, renowned hippie festival where everyone goes and listens to psytrance music. Yeah, man, the lights are crazy. The vibe is crazy. People are just chilling. But you do have to pay an entry fee of nearly $100. And allegedly, Adam, me and Emmy, in a parallel universe, might have thought that $100 is a little bit expensive. And in that parallel universe, where allegedly we thought $100 was a little bit more expensive, maybe Emmy has a little bit of a mischievous side. And in this parallel universe, where Emmy has a bit of a mischievous side and we don't want to pay $100 to get into the festival, maybe we snuck in at midnight using the fireworks as audio cover for our ascent over the wall and into the festival, where we spent the next 5 hours dancing and vibing to psytrance music. But in that parallel universe, which is definitely not connected to this universe in any way, it was a great New Year's and I really enjoyed it.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. If only. It's so funny you say that, because I was watching a firework display also from a hilltop. Mm. I mean, you know better than most people what this area is like. Lots of mountains and lakes, beautiful views. So there I was, sat atop a mountain looking at a firework display. And I thought, this would be quite a good time to commit a crime, wouldn't it? And lo and behold, there you are. In a parallel universe.
Yeah. At that exact moment, in a parallel universe, but in a different time zone, 13.5 hours ahead of you, me and Emmy were boosting each other up on top of a big wall and descending down into Goa's premier psytrance festival.
Wow. And I hadn't pinned you as a psytrance fanatic. So how did it go down?
I'll do anything to make sure that people like me. And the vibe of Vagator seemed to be one of a psytrance nature. No, it was really good, man. I was actually sober, like no drugs or alcohol, really. And I was just...
Or coffee.
Vibe into the music. Goodness, yes, I'd had 6 espressos. But I was just like, I think it's quite transcendent in some ways, just to kind of dance and be sober just with other people in like a loving, happy community. I actually had a really good time.
That's awesome, mate. That's something I've been craving for a really long time. And you sent me a couple of videos and stuff, and yeah, it looked like a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
It was a great time, man. And now here we are in India, in Goa. And I mean, stories will be abound. I've been surfing, I've been scootering, I've been hanging out with, you know, a different sort of United Nations, European Union of Travellers. It's been really brilliant. And I can't wait to share more of my Indian experience with the listener.
That's, yeah, really, really cool, man. What was it... sort of how is Goa? Because it's somewhere that, funnily enough, I've known of for a very, very long time because of the music genre, Goa trance.
Mm.
And I know it's got a bit of a rep as being sort of a party capital in India, isn't it? Does it attract a certain type of backpacker even nowadays?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's a lot of people from the Rainbow Collective here, you know, like that hippie community that like try and be all self-sustaining. And it's very much like a lot of fire spinning, juggling on the beach. We went to a live music venue the other night where it was like someone was playing with static juggling balls and doing sort of magic tricks while another man played a sitar in the background. It was like quite amazing and cool. And the audience, you know, hippies, what I love about them is they're kind of like kids. They're like, they have that childlike energy that you kind of lose when you go through puberty, but they've kind of recaptured it again. So there's like someone playing music and then suddenly like one hippie will start dancing and then another hippie will start juggling randomly and then the other will get out some fire and start playing with fire. And they're all just listening to music and vibing and dancing. And I think it's nice.
That is really nice. I've got to get there, mate. It's quite high up on my list. And I suppose it's a destination that lots and lots of people want to hit when they go to India. How are you doing so far with the food?
Food's fine. Had no gastronomic issues. I had a little bit of an upset. I got a long bus down to Goa with Emmy and I got a tiny bit of an upset.
A long bus?
Yeah. Yeah.
You just walked to the front of the bus and you're in.
Exactly. The bus was over 300 kilometers long. It was a big long walk. No, a really long bus ride in these sleeper carriages. And the way that works, it was separated into male and female. So Emmy was at the back in a single sleeper. Oh. I was on the side with an Indian guy staying in the carriage with me. And my goodness, let me tell you some stuff about this bus ride, because I had a bit of an upset stomach, not right. Like food poisoning, but just I think a bit of motion sickness, a long bus ride, sort of bumpy all the way down from, this was from Jaipur to Mumbai when we were speed running down towards Goa.
Oh, cool.
And this Indian guy got in the carriage next to me and he was quite respectful. You know, he wasn't like taking phone calls or anything. He got a phone call, he kind of hung up quickly and we were just sort of sleeping in quite a confined space together.
Yeah.
It's quite an intimate thing with a stranger. But I was fast asleep and I was rudely awoken, Adam, by, I mean, what's the thing that you could imagine happening least, I suppose. I woke up and his pointer finger entered my mouth.
Was that why you woke up?
I woke up because of the sensation of the pointer finger entering past my lips. And
you can't do that. You can't do that.
You can't do that. So I woke up and like went, what the hell? Like pushed him off of me.
Is he's asleep, obviously, or not?
He was fast asleep, because what had happened was we were sleeping next to each other and he'd sort of stretched out a hand and me, I didn't have my mouth tape on. So his fingers just entered my oral cavity. It was one of the most disgusting things that ever. He was shocked because I like grabbed him and I was like, what are you doing? And he was like confused. He was like, he didn't know what had happened.
Yeah.
And I went, you've put your fingers in my mouth. And he went, oh, sorry. Sorry doesn't cut it, does it?
You didn't know. Did you like it? No, you didn't like it. Okay, no, sorry. Yeah, no, that was an accident.
Oh, did you not want my fingers in your mouth? Sorry, sir. So that was a little bit gross, but unrelated to my indigestion. It did make me feel worse, though.
Yeah. How long was left of this bus journey? Because I imagine that changed the dynamic somewhat.
How long was his finger?
As long as the bus.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it did change the dynamic. The bus ride was about, 22 hours.
That's long. That is a very long bus journey.
Long one.
And how many hours into the bus journey was he fingering your mouth?
It entered about hour 3 and it lasted until about hour 17. About halfway through, I would say, mate. About halfway through. Yeah, we've not stayed in touch, me and him.
That's class.
Yeah.
I don't really know what to say. I don't think you could have done much different apart from maybe mouth tape.
Yeah.
Maybe there's another reason to do that. Forget all the health benefits and the deep sleep you can achieve. It's
exactly. Well, we don't really have to say much, mate. We can just all experience as a community, as tropologists, we can experience the mutual discomfort of the thought of a total stranger placing their fingers inside your mouth. And there's only one way to process grief like that, and it's to go on a brief meditation break. We'll see you in a bit. Adam, well, we'll never truly recover from the horrors of a finger in one's mouth whilst sleeping, but we can try, and that meditation break's made me feel at least a little better. The audience, I think, have been dreaming of a time for a few weeks now where they get to hear some of Adam, because it's all been me these last few weeks, talking about the Himalayas, all the Goa and Nepal and all that stuff. But you, a substantial half of tripology. You're overworked, you're beautiful, and you're in Canada, and the audience want to hear from you. So tell us a bit about what's going on in your life.
What is going on in my life? So, you know, over the last couple of months, we've been sort of working away, trying to get things up and running, get you on the road, gallivanting everywhere. And, you know, it's no secret, you're the interesting one doing interesting things. So back here, nothing's much has changed since you left, apart from it's got a lot colder and there isn't any more snow. It's a really, really strange year, Alan. I was looking forward to, you know, at least 3-4 feet of snow by now, and we were all going to be on the ski hills skiing the winter away. But unfortunately, that just hasn't happened. It's a really, really warm year. There's almost no snow. Lots of the ski hills are suffering. And we're suffering with them. So really, really strange one. Christmas, unfortunately, as you will know, I was supposed to be back home with my family. I'm currently going through the permanent residency process, and I had been told by someone on the inside
no.
that I would receive my permanent residency confirmation by the end of October, maybe early November. So there I was, clicking my heels, speaking with my family, saying, this is going to be the first Christmas in 10 years that I'm going to be able to spend with you. And they're all jumping for joy and thinking about what plans we can make. And there we were, early December, mid-December. And I just had to call it, unfortunately. And it was sad. It was really sad. But I've got wonderful people around me here. And we had, you know, dinner with neighbors and yeah, lots and lots of fun. It was quite low key. I mean, New Year's for me was probably slightly quieter than yours. No crimes were committed. However, I spent it with a really, really good friend of mine who is, he's featured on the podcast before. He's not, we'll interview him, but he's the one from Patagonia. He was the guide down there for 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
So he's Chilean and he made us some lovely empanadas.
Amazing.
Yeah, we sat there around the fire and had some empanadas and some drinks, some wine and stuff. And it was great. Yeah, everyone's really looking forward to 2024. So all round, really, really positive.
I'm ever so glad to hear it. I'm very sorry that it wasn't the Christmas and New Year's that you expected, but I'm very glad that you seem to be dealing with it with the kind of resolute uniformity that makes a tropologist a tropologist. So good job, Adam. And I look forward to the next one where I'm sure we might be together or hanging out, you know?
Mm. Yeah, yeah, completely. The thing I would say about that, and this might resonate with a number of people, is that when you live somewhere in a community as an expat, you know, I am doing this by choice. So there's only so much sympathy someone's going to give me. But I do feel like the problem I'm in is quite a peculiar one, because I'm waiting for permanent residency, which would, you know, believe it or not, is actually restricting me from traveling. And I haven't seen my family in over 3 years because I've been in Canada solidly, apart from trips to other countries and not back home. You know, that's my fault, not theirs. But then also I hadn't seen my family for Christmas it's been 10 years this year now. So that kind of stuff really grates on you. You know, it's almost compounded. And you don't meet that many people apart from other travelers and backpackers like yourself who are really able to relate what it's like to spend sort of a very extended time away from family.
And it's always hard, isn't it? I mean, family, the older we get, I think the more we both value family time and all that stuff. And it is difficult. I would say it's maybe the key drawback, the thing that's most regrettable about long-term travel is the absence of the ability to constantly see your family and say what's up and high five your mom and fist bump your dad and get your brother in a chokehold. You know, these are the things we really miss.
Yeah, I mean, talking about family, I do want to move on to that gift you were ever so kind to give me a few episodes back.
Okay, yeah, a few episodes back, I, like a dog at Christmas, gifted you an item, didn't I?
You did. It was a food item, because as you know, everyone knows, I think most backpackers can probably agree, that food and food culture is an enormous part of why we travel, you know, all together as a community, but also us in particular. And the item that you so very kindly gifted me without any warning whatsoever has now sort of taken shape. And it was my duty, my responsibility to look after and nurture this item, this feature on the podcast.
Yeah.
And I have now finally given it a name with some meaning.
Okay, well, let's, as is wont to do, cue a little drum roll and reveal name in due course.
So, Alan, I'm pleased to reveal that the food item on Tropology is going to be called Rice for Breakfast.
Oh, nice. I like it. It's an interrogative. I'm into that. Yeah.
Rice for breakfast, in whichever tone. I mean, you know, we've all had a bit of rice for breakfast, but I would really like to tell you the story behind the name.
Okay, I'd like to hear the story. Rice for breakfast. Let's start the item.
Rice for breakfast. You can't have rice for breakfast. So I'll tell you the story, because it does involve family, which is why I tried to make that sort of tenuous segue. But my mum, bless her, although she doesn't listen to the podcast, she is going to contribute whether she likes it or not. So let me just paint a picture for you, mate. Where my parents live is in the southeast of England, and we're about a 10-minute walk away from a very important hospital.
Mm.
It's a really, really big hospital, and it services the area around it, okay? So lots of little towns around where we live and this big important hospital that's only 10-minute walk away. And for that reason, when my sister moved out and went to university, my parents have got a couple of bedrooms that they could rent out and make a little bit of extra bunt. Mm. And the vast majority of the people who have stayed with us growing up have all been people who have worked at the hospital. So we've had doctors, nurses, porters, people of this nature, different consultants and things. And I think it's maybe played a role in sparking my wanderlust, you know, because lots of these people were from India or Pakistan or the Philippines or Malaysia. And I have had the absolute pleasure growing up sharing kitchens with them, always being sort of at the table with them while they're cooking food, and always, you know, been very fortunate to have, I guess, shared a lot of food with them and cooked with them. And I remember very distinctly, we had this wonderful Malaysian girl, Juen. You know, if you're listening, when I come back to London, we'll go out for dinner.
Oh, Juen, that sounds like a hell of an offer. Adam doesn't offer to go out for dinner with very many people, Juen. So the fact that he is just on the podcast, asked you out to dinner is pretty big deal.
No, she's got an amazing husband who's also my friend. So
yeah, both of them. Get out for dinner, Juen and husband.
They're cracking people, so sweet, from Malaysia, from a really, you know, fantastic part of Malaysia that's very famous for its food.
Penang?
Malacca.
Oh, yeah. Okay, nice.
And I think just north of Kuala Lumpur as well, maybe Z is. But really wonderful couple, very open, friendly, funny, super intelligent, and just a wonderful, just had such a wonderful time with them. So 2.5 years Juen was there. And I remember very distinctly one morning, the kitchen's very open, so there's like a breakfast room and then the kitchen. And Juen was eating her breakfast at the table. And Juen had cooked up this, it was basically a stir fry from the night before. And it was sort of stir fried vegetables with some rice. There was a bit of soy sauce in there, garlic and all that kind of stuff. And my mum, she's so amazing because it's quite an open planned house. Whoever's cooking in the kitchen, you can just smell it for miles. And I really want to tread carefully here because I love my mum to bits, but I think that the way that she said this kind of embodies a significant part about like Britain or British people and our reputation around the world. So there Juen was eating her rice and stir fry for breakfast. It was about 8 o'clock in the morning and I was sitting next to her with a coffee or whatever. And then my mum came downstairs. My mum came into the breakfast room. She saw Juen eating the rice and stir fry. And she looked at Juen and said, "Rice for breakfast? You can't have rice for breakfast." And I was looking at my mum going, "What?" And she was like, "Rice for breakfast." I was like, "Mum, about half of the world eats rice for breakfast." And she was like, no. She's coming from a place of love and a place of innocence. It's completely innocent. But she was like, "Yeah, no, Juen, you can't have that for breakfast. Rice for breakfast." And I was like,
she'd never seen the consumption of so many carbohydrates that early in the morning.
Well, she said, this is what's funny about that, is she said, "Why don't you have some toast or something? Go on, Adam, have we got any cereal? Go on, make her a bowl of cereal." Mum, I think she's fine. Not only do I think she's fine, I think what she's eating is probably far more delicious and possibly even more nutritious than a piece of shit white bread.
Yeah. a slice of mother's pride. Well, there you go. I like it. I think it's a good name for your item. And on rice for breakfast, you're going to cover a whole bunch of food-related topics, describing foods from around the world, giving food reviews and all that stuff. It's going to be Adam's food item. Rice for breakfast. Love it, mate.
Rice for breakfast.
Well, congratulations.
Thanks ever so much. It's got so much meaning to me, that story, because it's one of those funny memories of growing up. And of course, I think what that kind of symbolizes is those changes we go through when we're in different cultures.
Yeah.
And, you know, now, like, we wouldn't think twice about eating rice for breakfast. It's just so normal, right? Like, we would have any food at any point in the day, probably, unless we were fasting or whatever.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? Like, it's just food and it's just a time of the day.
Yeah. Completely. Yeah, I like it. And I like the jingle you've come up with for it as well. It's a little bit of music production from Adam on the podcast. We love all that.
No, I'm really glad, mate. I'm really glad. And I hope I did the story justice, because I'm going to show this episode to my mum and she... She's going to go right back inside her shell, bless her.
There we go. Like a hermit crab recoiling back into their shell upon hearing news of Adam's food item, Rice for Breakfast, Anthropology podcast, your mother will sort of recoil. I think that's an interesting image and one that will put smiles on all of our faces. Images. I like thinking about images and you like thinking about images and the audience like seeing them. So they want to see some images curated, cultivated, captured by us here at Tropology Podcast. They can go to instagram.com/Tropology Podcast. If they think, "My goodness, I like the podcast. I want to send these guys a travel story or a question I might have about traveling. There's a place to do that as well. It's tripologypodcast@gmail.com. That's right, electronic mail. It's our favourite kind of mail. We don't have a PO box, so it's your only option if you want to get in touch. There's lots of places to see us. You can go to TikTok, Instagram, Gmail, Facebook, X, all of those spots, man. And we love it all. Tripology Podcast and all social media. We want to hear from you. But Adam, today, it's been an excellent day. I'm in Goa, you're in Canada. We're tripologizing at an alarming rate. And the present, as a result of said tripologizing, is becoming like a sort of ominous grey cloud, which is punctuating the Goa sky in an altogether unscientific manner. So I'm desired to break free of that present and blast off into a future that can only be described as ever more wonderful than I could ever have imagined. Will you take my hand over there in the digital airways and come to that future with me?
I certainly will, mate. And I've got a little secret to tell you in the Lost and Found section. So if you are interested in knowing, you've got to sign up.
How do they sign up?
You go to patreon.com/tripologypodcast.
How interesting. Only $1 and you can hear Adam's special news in the Lost and Found section. Oh, I'm going to go there right now. Will you come with me?
Let's do it, mate. I'll see you there.
We'll see you there. Bye.
Bye.